Hey, everybody. Welcome in to the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, I'm your host, Connor Newcomb. Today's episode of Locked On Orioles is brought to you by Built Bar, the best tasting protein bar out there. To get $10 off your first order of Built Bar, just go to builtbar.com and use the promo code Locked On. On today's episode, to start the week here, we are going to continue the look around the major leagues at some former Orioles and what they're up to and where they've been, and also some current Orioles and talk about where they came from. And this week, we're going to talk Texas Rangers. And Bryce Patterick, the host of Locked On Rangers here on the Locked On Podcast Network, will join us to talk about the team down in Arlington, Texas. And, of course, we're going to talk a lot about the trade the Orioles and Rangers made in 2011 that sent Koji Uehara to the Rangers for Chris Davis and Tommy Hunter, kind of shaped both of those franchises at the time. And then we're going to talk some about Renato Nunez and Hanser Alberto, who were both on the Rangers in 2018, and then were both waived and both ended up with the Orioles, and of course were both big parts of the Orioles lineup in 2019. So we'll talk about those guys. We'll talk about the Rangers in general, kind of their fall and rise again potentially here. Of course, after they went to back-to-back World Series in 2010 and 2011, and then the Orioles knocked them out in the wild card game in 2012. Then the Rangers kind of resurfaced with back-to-back division titles in 2015 and 16, but they've been on the downslope, three straight losing seasons since then. So we'll talk about the current state of the Texas Rangers and more here on the podcast as we are joined by Bryce Patterick, the host of Locked On Rangers.
No, it's a joy to join you. I always feel like the Orioles, like I always refer to the Orioles as like Rangers East, because there's just so much overlap there over the years of players and what have you. So it's good to hop on with you.
Yeah, and that's what we're going to be talking about a lot today. And wanted to start with, you know, I don't know if it's the same for Rangers fans. It may not be, but for Orioles fans, it's one of the bigger transactions they've made over the past 10 years. And that is a trade that went down back in 2011 as the Orioles sent a guy who was then their closer in Koji Uehara, who was having a fantastic year for the lowly 2011 Orioles. They shipped him over to the Rangers team that was making a postseason run, got back to the World Series and was trying to bolster that bullpen. And the Rangers sent back Chris Davis and Tommy Hunter, who obviously both, to varying degrees, ended up being big parts of the Orioles kind of turning it around for the next five or so years. So first of all, from the Rangers side, you know, what did Koji bring that year? If you can think back to that 2011 time of the Texas Rangers and how, what was the feeling around Rangers fans at that time when the trade went down?
So the Chris Davis trade brings back a lot of memories. I don't know if you remember, like this was like 4 years after another significant trade of a Rangers first baseman who, well, at that point was much bigger a star, Mark Teixeira trade. And that, I don't know how familiar you or your listeners are with the Mark Teixeira trade, but it was one of John Daniels's, it was like his early years of being the Rangers GM. And so that was like the trade that like set the Rangers up with three guys who would go on to be all-stars. It was Elvis Andrus, Neftali Feliz, and Matt Harrison, who was just pretty good for a while and had like one all-star season. And so Chris Davis was a guy from Texas. I think he was from Longview. And he was basically, I call him a quad A player because he was like unbelievably good in AAA, but not so much in the big leagues. It was just, I feel like there was too much pressure on him. He needed that change of pace. But I was really excited about Koji. I thought he had a lot of potential. And he was okay. He was like just okay for the Rangers. And nothing that special. I mean, he was having some great seasons in Baltimore. And then he had that 1 year, I want to say it was 2018 with the Red Sox, where he was just unfathomably good. Even like though his fastball was like very low 90s. He lost a lot of velo, but his splitter was ridiculous. But he was not that great for the Rangers in 2011. I felt really good about Tommy Hunter being really good. Also, I went to college in Alabama, so I'm a big Alabama guy. So maybe that's partially my bias towards him. But I remember being disappointed in the Chris Davis trade. I knew in the moment it was probably the right thing, and I'm glad they were swinging for it. But it's still a little disappointing. Not like world crushing disappointing, because I know Chris Davis wouldn't have done what he did in Baltimore and Texas. He needed that scene change, but still look back on that with a little bit of like, oh, it's kind of a bummer. It didn't quite work out for the Rangers.
Yeah, for the Rangers, they got Koji. And, you know, he was okay for the rest of that 2011 season. And then he was better in 2012. But obviously with Joe Nathan there, was never a closer, was more of a middle relief guy. But, you know, Chris Davis goes and becomes maybe something that no Rangers fans could think would happen 2 years later, to hit 53 home runs. And Tommy Hunter eventually converts into a pretty solid bullpen arm after somewhat flaming out as a starting pitcher. But for Rangers fans, after seeing, you know, the team go to back-to-back World Series in 10 and 11 and come up short, did the trade hurt any more to have them get bounced in the first ever wild card game by that same Orioles team with Tommy Hunter and Chris Davis that next year?
I think a little bit, but for Rangers fans, that like the 2012 like wild card game hurt. I mean, like, we were already dead inside after 2011. Like, that's just like everything after that is like, you're not going to know a pain that's worse than that. And I hope nobody else has to experience something that miserable. Like, it still eats up Rangers fans, and like, you'll randomly wake up in the middle of the night like, oh. For a second there, I thought Nelson Cruz caught that ball and the Rangers won the World Series. But it's more about like the weeks before. In 2012, I think that was overall the best Rangers team, one of the best, if not the best, like Rangers team overall that has ever been. And in the like the last few weeks of the season, like, they were, I'm pretty sure, if not like the best record in the American League, they were definitely like number two. And for some reason, in like late August and early September, they just started to falter for like no good reason. And I think the A's were the ones that ended up winning the division that year, because they had one series in Oakland, and like, it was mostly, they just needed to win like one game in Oakland to basically seal up the division. And it was like the last game of the series, and they had just been beaten in the first two. And Josh Hamilton has this like routine fly ball in like the seventh inning or something with a couple runners on base, two outs. And he just drops it. Like, he just drops it in a day game. And he just did not live it down for a long, long time. It was just an unexplainable error. And so the Rangers were just pissed that they weren't, you know, why they even had to play in this dumb wild card game. It's like, we were one of the best teams in baseball all season. And so we got this new guy from Japan, Yu Darvish. So let's pitch him out there. And I still think he was pulled prematurely from that game, but that's discussion for another day. But I think more the stuff that led up to the wild card game hurt more than like, oh, here's Baltimore with all these ex-Rangers that are doing better there than they did here, hurt, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. And it's interesting to get the other perspective, because as you talked about, for the Rangers, you're coming off of back-to-back World Series losses and, you know, still a crusher that still has to hurt in 2011 with Nelson Cruz, of course, another guy who ended up playing for the Orioles and having a lot of success. But for the Orioles, it was the flip-flop. They hadn't been to the postseason since 97, and that game was kind of the culmination of that 2012 season for the Orioles, who both teams had won 93 games, but in very different fashions that year. And for Orioles fans, they look back on it, and it's, all right, you know, finally on national television in a playoff game for the first time in 15 years, and they beat a team that was the back-to-back AL champions. And it was kind of the start of something, whereas for the Rangers, maybe not the complete end of something, but kind of the end of that era of Rangers baseball, even though they did win a couple more divisions in 15 and 16. So I do want to talk about that. You know, they missed the playoffs in 13 and have the really bad year in 14. But
the thing in 13, they didn't make the playoffs. They did have a game 162 against the Rays. People always forget that. Nelson Cruz had just gotten back off of a suspension, and he could only play in that one game. And he did, I think he did pretty well. They faced David Price, and David Price was just at his apex at that point, and the Rangers just couldn't quite get it done. But they were that close to making it in four straight playoffs, which would have been something pretty special for that franchise.
And then they had the down year in 14, but came back and won the division back-to-back years in 15 and 16. And the Blue Jays just seemed to have their number, especially Jose Bautista. But the flip came, you know, between 16 and 17, and it's been three straight losing seasons, even though they had a pretty good start to last year, still ended up with a losing record. What's been the flip for this Rangers team in the last 3 years, where at the beginning of this decade, they were one of the best teams in baseball and now have kind of middled through these last three seasons?
Yeah, well, they were kind of an older team. The Rangers, you had it on the head. The 2010 through 2012, that was like kind of one era of like Rangers baseball. And even though it was like just a few years later, the 15-16 teams, just they felt very different. Adrian Beltre wasn't like a central figure in like 2011 and 2012 as much as he was, because it was still Michael Young's team. Like, it just kind of was at that point, because he'd been there for forever. He was still, that was when he was setting like all these franchise records. And then 2015 and 16, that was like Adrian Beltre's clubs. And so you had Jeff Banister for 2 years, who was, he was really good at like one specific kind of managing. He had this whole never ever quit was like his phrase. And so it was all about this grit, tough it out, like you're the underdogs, whatever. And they kind of were in 15 and 16. Like I still look back and think, wow, how the heck did those teams like win two division titles against the Astros, who basically had their same World Series like crew there? Like it was the same core right there. They just didn't have what's his face? That just left for the Yankees.
Like Gerrit Cole. They did not have Gerrit Cole.
No, and they had like just gotten Justin Verlander in like, I think, 16, maybe it was 17, I can't remember. But it was the same group of hitters though. And so basically after 2017, they weren't quite as talented a team. That was when just things just started falling apart. They knew they were gonna have to deal Darvish. Because I don't remember what it was. There was a thought that maybe he might come back, but it just made sense. And then once Darvish was dealt, Hamels kind of fell off a cliff, because he's like, this isn't a competitive team, and I know it. So Beltre finally started decline at age like 38 or whatever, after like finding his peak from 31 to like 37. And so they – was it – the end of 2017, I think, when they let go of Bannister and brought in Woodward, or they brought in some other manager, and they got Woodward for the start of 2018. And I think he's kind of ushered in a new role. He's kind of a more understanding, more kind of pat you on the back kind of guy, listen to you, and more analytically inclined than Bannister ended up being. Bannister was billed as this guy who was like, the best of both worlds. Like, he's old school, he's gritty, but he also understands a lot of numbers, because like Clint Hurdle and the Pirates, like they were very analytically inclined, and he was Clint Hurdle's bench coach for a long, long time. And so they're like, okay, cool, that's what you kind of need. You need this old school guy who can manage people, which he couldn't manage people as well as we thought he could, just in that one specific scenario, which he was perfect for. And he wasn't nearly as analytically inclined as he probably should have been. And so, or he just didn't, he didn't listen to analytics as much as we thought he would. And so Chris Woodward's kind of a different, more new school guy. A lot of the players really love him. He really trusts in his staff, and the players seem to trust his staff. And like we saw for the first half of Joey Gallo last season, like he bought in to the approach. And something that stuck with me that Joey was telling me, or just telling the media, that Woodward was telling him, like, hey, we're about the approach, not the results. So if you go up there, you're taking good swings, have good plate appearances, and you strike out four times a day, I'm going to tell you it's a good day. And if there are some days where you get three hits, but you're not playing to your strengths, I'm going to tell you, hey, like, the numbers may show that you had a good game, but this isn't what you're best at. So I think that's kind of where things are. They still got a pretty young core. They got a lot of good young or a lot of good old veteran pitchers right now, and like some young bats. That Ruggie's kind of a question mark. Joey Gallo, I think, is an MVP level player, and Willie Calhoun's kind of coming into his own. So they're kind of at the start of something. Like maybe this year, I think a shortened season would be very helpful for them. I really do, because I mean, like we saw at the beginning of the first half of last season, like they got a good run and they got a few decent pitchers, which they added some more to the back end of their rotation and kind of shored that up. Lynn and Minor are pretty good guys to headline a rotation. You throw in Corey Kluber, and it's like, okay, now we might be able to do something in like an 80 game season. I think there's a chance there.
Hey, back to the interview in just a sec, but wanted to tell you about Built Bars. They're tasty and they're healthy. It's a protein bar, but it tastes like a candy bar. You can get it in 16 different flavors. They're all covered in chocolate, easy to eat, and good for you as well. Great for a health-conscious person. Low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber. Just 20 grams of protein in, for example, the peanut butter brownie bar, which that's the best flavor combination right there. Peanut butter brownie. You can't beat that one. Just 170 calories, 3 grams of sugar, 3 grams of net carbs. You can't beat that in a protein bar that's good for you, and it really tastes good as well. So you can go to builtbar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll get $10 off your first order. Use promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off at builtbar.com. This podcast is sponsored by the audiobook edition of 24, Life Stories and Lessons from the Say Hey Kid. In this reflective and inspirational memoir, the legendary Willie Mays shares the inspirations and influences responsible for guiding him on and off the field. Widely regarded as the greatest all-around baseball player in history, the beloved Willie Mays offers people of all ages his lifetime of experience meeting challenges with positivity, integrity, and triumph. This special audiobook production includes a foreword read by Bob Costas and a bonus conversation with Willie Mays and his co-author, John Shea. Whether you miss seeing your favorite players on the field this season or are looking for the perfect Father's Day gift, 24 is the inspiring story of one of sports fans' favorite living legends. Buy the audiobook edition of 24 now, wherever audiobooks are sold. Yeah, and that kind of leads me into my next question. You mentioned it. They started really hot last year and flamed out by the end, ended up 78 and 84 in 2019. They bring back most of the same team, especially the younger hitters. And they make some additions to the pitching staff. But obviously the biggest one was bringing Corey Kluber, who is not that far removed from a Cy Young, but is coming off a big injury that forced him to miss most of last season with Cleveland. So you touched on it a bit, but you know, at what stage are they to getting back to really competing in that division with the Astros and the Athletics? Because, you know, they looked like they could do it for a good part of last year. They've got a young core, but they didn't really add too much for 2020.
They really didn't. And it's weird because, like, I mean, the Rangers are kind of similar to the Orioles, and like, they've always been like, when they're at their best, they just have a really deep lineup and just batter you, and they've got a few decent pitchers, and that's what makes the good teams. But, like, this year and last year, like, the lineup was kind of weak, actually. Hunter Pence was a huge part of that team, and the reason the way they faltered down the stretch is because it showed the thinness of their lineup, because Joey Gallo was out for most of the second half of the season. When he was there, he wasn't quite playing like he was in the first half, and Pence missed quite a bit of time, and Willie Calhoun missed some time here and there. But Danny Santana was kind of the surprise of the season last year. He hit, I think, like 260 to 280, but with like 20-plus home runs, which he had never had more than 7 in a season. And it's just the defensive versatility of him to be able to play a decent center field or shortstop or second or even sometimes third and first. It was just kind of – he was their Mr. Do-It-All, and he was very, very valuable to that team last year. And I still think they're about a year away with a shortened season. I mean, the Rangers have had plenty of years where I thought they were the best team in baseball, but they couldn't get the job done because baseball's postseason is random. It just kind of is. But I don't know. I feel like the year that eventually they will win a World Series is going to be a year where they weren't the best team in baseball. They just kind of San Francisco Giants their way into the playoffs and then, like, happen to get hot. Because I feel like that's just kind of the best deal. But they're still – I'd say 2022 is what I'd feel really confident. Because they still need a few more bats in this lineup. They just do plug in the gap with Todd Frazier is interesting. Ronald Guzman isn't quite there as a hitter. But a guy to look out for when the season starts up, a guy who had an amazing spring training and for once in his life started hitting for power, is Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. Low-key, one of the best defensive third basemen in baseball when he does play. But he had, like, 20-grade power, like Hanser Alberto power. And this year he went out. They stopped the transition to catcher because they were trying him as a catcher because if you got no pop, but you can play 17 different positions, you might as well, like, take a stab at catcher. But, like, during spring training was when he kind of put on a show. He hit, like, 7 home runs in spring training, which he has, like, I think 6 or 7 professional home runs, like, minor leagues at all. So, and I think 4 of those are into the Crawford boxes in Houston. So, definitely a guy I think I'm definitely going to keep a real eye on if and when baseball starts in 2020 for these Rangers. But, yeah, they're still a few years away from being legitimate contenders.
So a guy you mentioned right there, Hanser Alberto, is one of the other guys I wanted to get to here before we let you go, because he's one of the two guys who last season the Orioles claimed off of waivers from, not directly maybe from Texas, but who were initially with the Rangers. And Hanser Alberto had spent his entire time in the major leagues with the Texas Rangers before heading to the Orioles last year. Is the Rangers signed him as an amateur free agent back in 2009, and he spent time in the bigs with Texas 2015, 2016, 2018. He only played in 89 games over those 3 years and was a 192 hitter. Did not hit a homer either, as you mentioned, with the lack of power. But did things with Alberto, they just kind of realized by that 2018 season after 13 games and only 5 hits for him that that experiment trying to get him to the bigs was over, and that's kind of why he was put on waivers?
Yeah, I still don't quite understand the – I mean, I do understand the thinking, but it still surprised me in the moment because Hanser Alberto is a guy who they loved coming up. He was I think 2-time platinum, like minor league platinum glove winner. He was phenomenal defensive shortstop, and he'd always hit right around 300. He wouldn't walk too much, wouldn't hit too much for power, but man, could he pick it at shortstop, and always would hit around 300. Even in like, is he from Venezuela? Because I think that's where he plays winter ball quite a bit, if I'm remembering correctly. But he was also really good buddies with everybody in the clubhouse. He was a guy that everybody liked, which is something you want from your minor leaguers. But there was a time when they had to decide to put him on the 40-man roster, and it was between him and Odubel Herrera, and that was the year they decided to go with him over Doobie. Herrera ended up getting picked in the Rule 5 draft by Philadelphia because they knew he could hit, and they just found a place to stuck him in center field, and that kind of worked out for them for a little bit. But because they made that decision and they knew that Odubel Herrera was going to be able to hit at a big league level, I thought it was surprising that they would eventually give up on him. But it's because he put on quite a bit of weight and he wasn't quite as quick twitch as he used to be when he was winning platinum gloves at shortstop. And so that was, I think, the decision when they made a decision to go away from him and put him on waivers, which was upsetting because he and Joey had this very intricate home run ritual every time Joey would hit a home run, or the few times that Hanser might in the minor leagues. But he was always a clubhouse favorite. And so definitely a guy I still like and root for, and not surprised at all that he's found a bit of a consistent role in the major leagues. And I think Baltimore definitely got a good one there.
Now, you said you're not surprised he found a consistent role. Was it surprising for you or for Rangers fans in general that not only did he find an everyday starting role in Baltimore, but he hits 305, he mashes lefties, hits over 400 against lefties, and ends up with 12 home runs as well, and then showed a little bit of power.
The power is the surprising thing. I never thought he was going to have the power. I knew if he could stay in shape, he could get back to being a pretty decent defensive player, no matter where he played in the infield, and that he was going to hit some singles off lefty. I knew that was going to happen. But the power, that's like still surprising. No matter how juiced the baseball is, double-digit home runs is a big feat for him, and I'm really happy for him, and I bet a lot of Rangers fans are too.
And so the other guy I wanted to talk about who spent much less time with the Rangers, but he did go from the Rangers to the Orioles, is Renato Nunez, who was another waiver claim by the Orioles as they got him off waivers from the Rangers back in May of 2018. But Nunez only spent a little bit of time with Texas, just 13 games in 2018. Is there any memory of Nunez in a Rangers uniform, or just kind of one of the guys that, you know, he was with Oakland for so long in the minors and then just kind of came through Texas quickly and was gone?
No, there's some memory there. And I remember being kind of mildly tiffed when they let him go, because, I mean, we all know what he is defensively, but, like, the Rangers haven't had that many great right-handed bats for several years now. And that's one of the reasons why Hunter Pence was so good for the Rangers, just because they need some righty bats. They have a lot of lefties. And they even got rid of Nomar Mazara this summer, basically, for kind of mid-teens prospect in terms of, like, system ranking, where he fits in now. But he was a guy who mashed for the Rangers in the few games that he played there. I remember he had this series in Tampa Bay where I think he hit, like, three or four home runs in, like, a three-game series. And I was like, oh, okay, maybe this is something. And then before you know it and started to learn his name, he was gone. And I thought, like, well, some team's got a roster spot for him, and he's going to hit major league pitching, and he's going to hit some bombs. He may not be anything defensively, definitely not at third base, but he might be able to hold his own in the outfield. But that guy can mash, and so I'm glad he's getting his opportunity. Kind of annoyed that the Rangers didn't just stick with him and put him at DH or something. But for the last, like, 3-4 years, they've had too many first base / DH types, and unfortunately all of them have been lefties, and so I thought it was nice that they had a big power righty bat, and I think that's one of the big reasons they went and got Todd Frazier's, because they needed that right-handed presence. But yeah, not surprised that Nunez is sticking in the major league, because that dude can mash it.
Do you feel like maybe Rangers and Oakland fans as well, because even though he didn't spend too much time with the A's at the big league level, he was in their minor league system for a while. You think those are the only two fan bases that maybe could even possibly believe that Renato Nunez, if you told him this, hit 31 home runs in 2019 in an Oriole uniform?
You know, I think the Rangers and Oakland fans might be the only ones who know who Renato Nunez is.
That's fair.
But no, I'm not surprised that he hit 31 home runs. Dude's got some raw pop out the wazoo.
Yeah, and he definitely showed it last season. One last thing for you, Bryce, before we let you go. You look at this Ranger team going into 2020, could be a shortened season, could be no baseball until 2021. We just don't know. But I think everybody knows Gallo, and you mentioned with Kiner Falefa being kind of the under-the-radar guy for the Rangers. But even a little deeper than that, is there anybody coming up through that Ranger system who might be the next guy to make a major league debut with them and join this young group of players as they go forward?
Well, there's not too many that I'd say are like impact. There's a guy who, in my opinion, is the Rangers' top prospect, is a center fielder switch hitter named Leo Taveras, who right now could be one of the better defensive center fielders in baseball. He's a switch hitter. He doesn't really have much pop. He walks quite a bit. He's not going to be a star, probably, because the offense isn't quite there. If he takes a leap offensively, then he'll be a really good player. But the guys to watch out for is a guy who already made his debut last year, Nick Solak, who is listed – his position is basically listed as, like, hitter, because he's not that special defensively, but he's a right-handed hitter who – hit, like, I think right around 300 in the, like, 25-ish games that he played at the major league level last year. He basically plays some second base, some third base, some first, like just kind of wherever they can fit him. And he's definitely a major league caliber hitter. He's got some pop. And he's a guy that the Rays really liked. And the Rangers made like a kind of really minor swap. They had a bullpen guy. I honestly can't remember his name at this point because he played probably 15 innings with the Rangers at the major league level. Pete Fairbanks, that's who it was. It was just a one-for-one deal. Peter Fairbanks, who throws 100 and has a nasty slider. So you're going to – I'm sure you've already seen plenty of him in the Rays bullpen. But they made that one-for-one trade because the Rays had a glut of infielders, which I feel like making any trades with the Rays is like asking for failure because the Rays are just a smarter organization than you.
Yeah, you got to watch out at all times.
Yeah, if they're trading you one of their guys, you got to be like, okay, what's wrong with this one? But no, he's been pretty good for the Rangers, and he's definitely a guy to keep an eye on. Also, if you don't know the name Willie Calhoun, you will after this season. If you watched any of the – did you watch any of the players tournament of MLB The Show?
I did. Was watching Dwight Smith Jr. for the Orioles. I think people learned who Dwight Smith Jr. was during that.
Yeah. Yeah, they did. Willie Calhoun was Joey's MVP. He hit, like, I think 550 for the tournament with, like, some ridiculous amount of home runs. But Willie's a guy who's always been – he was actually the main prospect in the Yu Darvish trade from the Dodgers. And so he was a guy who, coming up, you ask him, what position do you play? He's like, I'm a three-hole hitter. And that was kind of his stance on defense. But he's worked his butt off. He had that injury that was really scary at spring training this year. He got hit in the face with a fastball by Julio Urias and broke his jaw. And he had a few setbacks last year right when he was, like, basically given a spot out of camp. After, like, 2 or 3 years of being offensively ready for Major League Baseball, but defensively he wasn't quite putting in the work. And I was transcribing this radio interview that he had the other day. He was saying John Daniels basically, like, checked his ego because he, like, called John Daniels in, like, 2018 when he didn't make the team out of camp. And he's like, hey, I'm good enough to be a major leaguer right now. Like, why didn't I make the camp? As this, like, 20-year-old kid calling up the GM. And JD shot straight with him. He's like, you're not good enough. Like, if you're going to be an offense-only player, you got to put up offense-only numbers. And right now, you're out of shape. You're kind of chubby. And you're not working as hard defensively as you need to be. So if you're going to only play offense, then you're going to have to either hit better or be half decent at defense. So you're not quite there yet. And so he worked his butt off and has become a passable defender in left field and a much smarter base runner and a much more down-to-earth, grounded teammate who cares a lot about his buddies and not just hitting dingers. So I think he's going to make a big stink at the major league level when he finally gets his full-time opportunity this year. And I'm really excited to see it. So yeah, Nick Solak and Willie Calhoun are basically the two guys. And the two guys you should be looking out for, if not Leody Taveras, if you like center field defense.
Yeah, Solak and Calhoun were definitely fun to watch in the small sample size. And
when you flip out one more. as a Texas Tech guy, I would be remiss if I didn't mention this guy, a guy named Josh Young, who's a third baseman out of my alma mater, Texas Tech, who I got to watch while I was still there. He was a freshman, and I remember seeing him the first series of the year, and I was like, this guy might be something. And he was the Rangers' first-round pick in 2018, and he's probably going to be at Double-A sometime this year. So I don't think he's going to make his major league debut until, like, 2021. But that's a guy to keep an eye on down the road. I can't not mention my Texas Tech guy. I would hate to be leaving him off of any lists.
Yeah, I was in Hagerstown with the Suns last season. We got to see Josh Young come to Hagerstown for a series. He definitely looks the part of a major leaguer when he walks up to the plate. And he was definitely one of the more impressive prospects that I saw last summer. But for Rangers fans and watching Ranger games, hopefully we get baseball in 2020. If nothing else, just telling everyone here, tune in to watch Joey Gallo hit homers, because he will hit some up into that upper deck, at the old ballpark, but I'm sure he'll find a new place to hit them in the new ballpark if games get played there in 2020. But Bryce, hope you're staying safe, and thanks so much for coming on to talk some Rangers baseball. And you know, back at the beginning of this, we talked what, at least for Orioles fans, one of the biggest trades that they've seen go down for the O's in a while.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me. You stay safe too, and hopefully we'll get some baseball in 2020. Who knows, man?
So again, our thanks to Bryce Patterick, the host of Locked On Rangers, for joining us on the pod today. And it was interesting to kind of hear him talk about, you know, I think as Orioles fans, we thought that once we got Hanser Alberto and Renato Nunez, that those guys were pretty much castaways and not known much about by the Rangers fans. But Hanser Alberto was not a super highly rated prospect, but people knew about him. And then people saw the power potential for Nunez in both Oakland and in Texas. Of course, he was with the Athletics before the brief stint with the Rangers and then onto the Orioles. But it's interesting to hear Bryce talk about, you know, he thought highly of both of those guys, Alberto and Nunez, before they made their way to the Orioles. And then also just to get a Rangers perspective of that 2012 AL wildcard game, the first one of its kind, the Orioles, for them, they had finally come back onto the scene, got their first playoff win in 15 years. And for the Rangers, it was just kind of like off of back-to-back World Series trips. They just didn't have the same team, kind of fell apart at the end, and it was just on to next year for that Texas team, and they would have to wait a couple more years before getting back to the postseason. So an interesting different perspective there from Bryce, and we thank him for coming on to give us that perspective. One last thing, little KBO update. Week 4 of the Korea Baseball Organization season starting earlier today, as I record this on Tuesday afternoon. We had a couple Orioles, former Orioles pitchers hit the mound. Tyler Wilson got the start for our LG Twins. 6 scoreless for Tyler, allowed just 2 hits, 3 strikeouts, and no walks. The Twins winning it 3-0 today over the Hanwha Eagles to take game 1 of that series. And LG, again, sitting alone in second place right now in the KBO, 3 games back of the NC Dinos. Hyunsoo Kim in that same game for the Twins, 2-for-4, a couple of singles and a walk, as he is creeping very close to hitting 400 on the season. And the final, former Oriole Dan Straley got the start for the Lotte Giants, 6 1/3 for him, 3 hits, no runs, 7 strikeouts, 4 walks for Straley. The Giants got a run in the 8th on an RBI single from the former Seattle Mariner, Daeho Lee, and the Giants were able to win their game today by a score of 1-0 to open their series up against the Samsung Lions in the KBO. And one more piece of news for baseball in other countries, the Nippon Professional Baseball, the top league in Japan, which is widely known around the world as the number 2 league behind Major League Baseball as far as talent-wise. Many think it's kind of a 4A league, somewhere in between AAA and the big leagues here in the States. Of course, Adam Jones is over there playing for the Oryx Buffaloes this season. They have set their opening day of June 19th, so a little over 3 weeks from their opening day. Unfortunately, they do play their games just around the same times as the KBO plays, so it's either late nights or early mornings here on the East Coast. But in the coming weeks, we'll have some Japanese professional baseball fans and writers maybe come on the show to talk about Adam Jones and that league and what we can watch out for there. There's a couple other former Orioles, including Gabriel Yanoa, is over in that league this year as well, but just something to keep an eye on. Couple more episodes coming up later this week. Couple of exciting episodes later this week. Tomorrow we're going to have a good one. Alex Fast and Scott Chu, both of Pitcher List, are going to join us for 2 guests on the podcast. Not something we've done a lot, but the 2 of them will join us to talk about the KBO. You know, of course, they cover normally Major League Baseball and fantasy baseball over at Pitcher List, but without it, they've kind of swung their coverage over to the KBO, and we'll talk about those 6 former Orioles in the league, how they've done, what these 2 baseball writers have thought about the league, and a good conversation coming up for you tomorrow, and then later in the week on Friday to finish out the week, we'll have Jason Burke on. He is the host of Locked On Athletics, as we'll talk about some current and former Orioles who have been with the A's in their career. We'll chat a little bit about Aaron Brooks, Nick Hundley, Liam Hendricks, Corbin Joseph, and some general athletic stuff as well. Of course, that team making it to the playoffs last year, but falling in the AL wildcard game. We'll see where they stand heading into 2020. If you like what you've heard on the podcast so far, go ahead and subscribe if you could on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you're listening right now. Give us a rating or a review as well. It really helps out the pod. We'll be back with you tomorrow, but until then, this has been the Locked On Orioles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Next up, tell your smart device to play the latest episode of Locked On MLB.